Fred Film Radio, Rome Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 12th edition of Rome Film Festival. I'm in company of Janus Metz Pedersen, director of Borg Makero, with Shia LaBeouf as Sverris Gudnason.
The first thing that hit me while watching the film, I wanted to know if you were, if you agreed with that, is that I found that they could look at each other and understand each other, even though they were so different and they are so different. Mm. So is it something that you worked on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the film is very much about Björn looking at John or John looking at Björn and seeing, finding recognizing that same drive or that same sort of, you know, demon that's snapping at their feet, and through looking at each other, they recognize something within themselves. So, in that sense, it's very true. And later in life and in the movie, they become friends for that exact, you know, observation. They realize that they belong to a special tribe of people, you know, that make deals with dark forces.
So, how did you decide to shoot the match? The angle from which you represent it?
Well, I think there's different types of representation in the final. Of course, big part of it is to be in the shoes of the players, you know, actively with them on court, feeling the palpable tension and the fear and the anxiety and the pressure, which is very much about a handheld type operation. And then, you know, we kind of elevate ourselves from that into, you know, a type of God's eye perspective, looking down at these guys as two people that are, you know, lonely and trying to find a way and trying to grapple with who they are and manifest this kind of intensity to feel alive and to find some order in chaos, maybe. And then maybe in the end it all turns into a kind of an out-of-body experience where your whole life is unrolled in front of your eyes and everything you brought with you in your upbringing and the experiences you've had comes to a climax. So I think there's these various elements that we're composing in the film, in order to you know, try and talk appropriate a story at multiple levels.
What are Björn and John representing for you, two iconic tennis rock stars?
Yeah, they're legendary icons of the game. They're the first rock stars of the game. Maybe some of the first rock stars in sports. But more than that, I think their story unfolds. A chance to explore something about a human condition. You know, we're talking about two people that in completely different ways were pursuing the same thing, pursuing a sense of perfection, pursuing a sense of intensity and a feeling of being alive, and maybe through that a sense of purpose. I mean, the film starts with a character who's toying with the closeness of death, or maybe even with suicide, and I think that creates a backdrop to the whole story. That these are very driven people. These are two characters that maybe subconsciously ask themselves profound questions about existence.
Even though you're focusing on both their childhood, so both their path to the final match, was it your idea from the beginning to sort of focus more on Borg than Makero?
I think the drama is constructed in the way that we look at Björn's sort of last attempt to become a historical legend, and for the kind of the hollowness that's somehow part of that project. From a human perspective. And then we're seeing John McEnroe coming into the same kind of life because he's driven by some of the same purposes. So I think Björn's story kind of pulls McEnroe's story and McEnroe's story pushes Björn's story. So it's a 1-2 type of operation. I mean, you know, if this film had been made in America, it would probably have more focus on John McEnroe. Now it's made in Sweden, and it started from that position. So you could say that the film has advantaged Borg in its storytelling, but it's certainly a two-handler in my book, because I don't think, you know, it would have to be, if it was just a biopic on Björn Borg, it would have to be a completely different structure. So it's more than anything, it's a rivalry story.
Tennis in the past has often been portrayed in a bad way in cinema, and I was struck by the way you portrayed with such an attention to the aesthetics, the geometry of the game, and the psychological element underlined by the opening quoting opened by Andre Agassi. Which was your relation to the sport before?
I didn't have much of a relation to the sport before shooting the film. I mean, I remember the era of tennis that was in the late 70s and early 80s as something spectacular. I remember it as part of my childhood, that tennis was really something extraordinary. And I particularly remember John McEnroe as a character. I was 5 years in 1980, so I don't remember Björn Borg as well from his active career. But of course, he was still there as a personality. I mean, he's probably the biggest sporting icon in Scandinavia ever. I mean, you could maybe talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic today, but I think today the world of sports is so much more diverse and exploded that you don't have this stratosphere of fame. Yeah, you know, talk about Messi or Ronaldo, and maybe, you know, I don't know, but it was a different time, obviously, and I remember that. But I was interested in tennis from a sort of philosophical, psychological, existential dimension, and there are a few people that I admire, you know, of Danish artists, the Danish filmmaker Jørgen Leth, which you might be familiar with, has made some portraits about tennis. So I thought, well, there's a world here that I want to dive into. And then I read Andre Agassi's biography, and also read a book called On Being John McEnroe, which I thought was extremely interesting. And I began to understand, you know, the sort of foundations of this sport, of how it's really a psychological, mental game. And I began to look at the game as, you could say, as an analogy to life, in a sense, as a way of, you know, trying to create a sense of order in chaos. So it was a very, I came at it from an explorational perspective, and maybe, you know, as partly as an anthropologist or as a sign, you know, someone who would do some kind of hermeneutical interpretation of the signs of tennis. You know, if we look down at this tennis court as aliens, what would it represent? What would it tell us about human beings and the human condition? The fact that someone invented this game and it has a particular structure, what does that mean? What does it tell us? And what does Björn Borg and John McEnroe's story tell us? Those were the kind of questions that I was interested in.
I wanted to know, how important was for you to have two actors that could resemble not only physically but also psychologically these two characters in real life? Some biographies don't necessarily need actors to look exactly like those characters, but in this case, I found it that it was like the cherry on top. Mm. And so I was wondering how important it was for you for that.
Well, we tried to make everything as real as we could and try to make it feel real. You know, Björn and John are still alive, and there's a lot of people that have a very strong relationship to this sporting history. And I wanted to service that by making it feel as authentic as I possibly could. Now, it's... So in the casting and this kind of oppositional thing that's going on in the story is, of course, one of the big drivers. So it was important for me to find an actor to play Bjorn Borg who had the same kind of mysterious secrecy about him. And it was important for me to find a John McEnroe who had this kind of explosive character to him. And I think Sverrir and Shire both perfectly possess those qualities. But I have to say, it's also not something that you go into from day one. It's a huge job to appropriate and find those truths. And it's a huge preparation for the actors, respectively, to take on this daunting task of trying to, you know, portray a real-life character that so many people have an idea about, and to find their own Bjorn and find their own John. Their preparation into this was from the start very physical. They trained tennis every day for 6 to 8 months, respectively, with professional coaches. They had personal trainers. They had diets. They really transformed themselves from being, you know, their, you know, from being Sverrir and Shire in their sort of normal life kind of environment to being athletes and living like athletes and being more and more like John and Bjorn. And it was an amazing thing to see this transformation. I mean, body-wise, Sverrir turned in, you know, transformed himself from being just a regular-looking guy in his 30s to being super fit. I mean, you've seen the footage. He's like chiseled out. There's not an inch of fat on his body. It's all like muscle and fiber. And Shire, you know, lost weight and also changed his whole muscle tone from being quite sort of buff and solid, having played a soldier and having played his part in American Honey just before, and to this kind of lean athlete. So the casting, you see an outline of something in a casting process, and then you build from there, and you go closer and closer to where the goal is going to be. But I think with this movie, we worked so hard and we were so dedicated that I actually think we got further than that I'd hoped that we could get.
Did the actors appreciate how the movie came out?
Yeah, I think they're both very happy with the movie. I think I know they are extremely proud of what we did and the depth that we went to, and you know, they've been very, very supportive and helpful, you know, and showing up at premieres. And I think particularly for Shire, who has come out of a rough patch personally, this film has really been a cathartic experience for him. You know, I think he's used it very actively in order to deal with some personal angers and anxieties, and it's been quite extraordinary for him to see. And I think he's also expressed that working in Scandinavia on a Scandinavian film has felt like a very, very safe environment for him, because the way I work, I mean, there is no limits on set. You know, you can be whoever you want to be at whatever time you want to be, and we're really trying to embrace sort of the creative process and the creation and all the fear that goes into that. And I think Shire felt very loved and very sort of embraced and very safe in that environment.
Did he stay in character outside the set?
No, some people think of Shire as a method actor. He would never call himself a method actor. He's not someone who rocks onto set and then he is John McEnroe. But his way of acting borders on method acting in the sense that he needs it to be real, and he rocks. You know, he has a very rare capacity to open up and to create a presence in front of the camera that's very, very intense and very visceral. And he had every chance to do this in this part. But as soon as the day is over, I mean, he's shy and he's the sweetest, most loving guy you could hang out with. No, it's not that kind of deal.
What about you? Which character do you feel closer to in terms of your directorial style? Are you more of a Kolborg or
the hot-tempered macro?
No, I'm neither. I'm a very you have to work with different actors in different ways. You have to find out what works for them. But I'm a very collaborative type of director. It's a truth-seeking process that we're all in together. I'm not just a guy sitting behind a monitor and then it's stand on mark, say a line, and then I'm gonna like judge you for it. It's really trying to go in and find the truths in the scenes, collaborating in rehearsal sessions, etc. Before, not rehearsal sessions in the sense that you read the script and you perfect the lines. That's not what I'm after. I would set up scenarios, for instance, with Shia and Ian, who plays his dad, to do father-son stuff. So they would become father-son. And we work around that, and we make up little scenarios that they would improvise. And fortunately, Sverre and Tuva knew each other really well before the set, so we didn't have to, make the kind of girlfriend boyfriend type of thing feel real, because they're very good friends already, and this intimacy comes quite natural to them. But working into the scenes in that way and trying to have the freedom and the safety to improvise and change things around, etc., was very important to the set. And in that way, I'm a listener more than anything. I feel it's about feeling out where the truth of it is, and maybe it's right next to what you thought it was going to be. Maybe something happens on set that makes you realize, wow, this scene is much better if we do it this way. Or it was really interesting what happened when you cut out that line, or when you went over to that side of the room. And sometimes we would do things completely, just handheld camera, rock and roll into the scene, and amazing stuff would happen. Like, a lot of the dressing room scenes are very improvised. I mean, there's a rough outline of what the dialogue should be, but from there, the actors really roll with it. And as a director, I try to equip an actor to have a sense of his character and a sense of his purpose in the scene that's not necessarily known to the other guy. Because then you get real reactions to improvisation. If you're trying to push each other, the actors are really trying to push each other to achieve what they want to achieve in the scene, but they don't necessarily know what the other guy is about. Then they keep holding and fighting for their own right and pushing up against the other. And then you have this explosive dynamic. And I think in some of the scenes where that's most visible is, the dressing room scenes between Lappe, Bergelin, and Björn, but also in the scene with McEnroe and Peter Fleming, came out very strong.
Borgson played in the film. How was it?
Well, it was a beautiful thing in a sense that I think Leo lent so much authenticity to the movie by the fact that his father's story is a lived experience for him. I mean, he's part of that family every day, and it's part of his blood. So whenever we filmed Leo, it was like shooting a documentary. There was so much life there. There was so much pain, I would say, and so much expectation, and so much intensity in this kid, that it was really one of the most interesting things for me about making the film. Björn was extremely respectful. He never interfered with the filming process. Only at one time where we wanted Leo to go ice skating, he said, "No, you can't put him on skates, because if he's going to fall and break his arm, then his career is going to be over."
Is he playing tennis professionally as well?
He's one of the best tennis players in his age group, Leo. He's the new Borg. Okay. And so they were very, very scared that he was going to fall on the skates, so we had to put him on a sled and then have a double. But that's the only time when they said, you got to find a plan for making this work. But obviously, you know, the fact that Leo was in the film also gave me a lot of opportunity to talk to Björn about his experiences. And another person that was very helpful in the preparation of the movie was Mariana, who I developed a very close relationship with, and who's of course been a first-hand witness to everything that went on, and of course all the behind-the-scenes type of stuff that not necessarily comes out in biographies or in the more sort of formal representation of that story.
What about McEnroe? Did he help?
John, I we tried to get John involved from an early stage, but we were not successful in doing so, and that's too bad that he didn't want to come on board. I think it could have been very fun to talk to him about his life. But I have to say, it's also, you know, when you're making a film about the past, as we've done in this incident, it's not necessarily the character, you know, that Björn and John has the whole truth and nothing but the truth about their own life. You know, we're each standing, you know, on the ground, and you can't necessarily see the ground that we're standing on. So as a filmmaker, and this is very true for the scriptwriter Ronnie as well, you know, you become a kind of a historian or an archaeologist that's trying to unearth some picture from that time, and it's all hidden in the past. It's all clouded, and there's so many different perspectives and ideas and truths and also agendas today. I mean, Björn and John have their own agendas in trying to portray the story in a particular light, and we chose to make our story. And you know, Björn has been extremely positive about the film. John has been much more reserved in his reaction to it, and you can only guess and wonder. And I think it's at the end of the day, it's, you know, what's important is, I think, if the film is a piece of cinema or a work of art, touches people and speaks some sort of truth, then it has value.
Thank you, Janos Mats Pedersen, director of Borg McEnroe, for talking about the film coming out in Italian cinema from November 9th and screening in competition at the 12th edition of Rome Film Festival. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.